All right, it is exactly noon. We'll all come to order, please. And I will begin by calling the roll. Mr. Brisman?
Here.
Mr. Lanson? Mr. Campbell?
Where's your hat?
It's here. What?
Right here.
Oh, here.
Mr. Stevens?
Thanks. I'm here.
Mr. Hill?
You're right over there.
Mr. Spence?
Mr. Chairman?
And, yes.
You need to be over there so we can all hear you.
Very good. I will move. I don't want to be too loud.
I can hear it well. Well, this is a good opportunity for the four commissioners. Please recollect that, except for Commissioner Campbell, we are all observers. And please follow the lead of the chairman of this committee if you want to speak.
I think that's a new book that we do examinations.
So we will, we have four items on our agenda, and when we get through those, if anyone wants to bring any other subject up in either new or old business before we adjourn, we can do that. We'll begin, and this will be our standard beginning of our meetings, with a review of the financials year to date, and that will include the cash flow that Melanie has prepared, and also the capital projects plan, so we can get a good sense overall of the port's financial position. And I urge people, as Melanie is going through, if you have questions, please ask them. And if you don't want to ask them while she's going through, we'll have questions at the end. And Mr. Fick,
yes, sir.
Her goodness.
Sorry, I'm late.
So, Melanie, if you will.
Grab a sandwich.
Do we have a pack? Do we have a packet for?
What do you need? Clifford's packet. You'll get one in mere moments.
Mere moments.
Melanie.
Can I sit over there? Here?
Whichever you want to do.
Yes, sir.
Kelly.
This is the peanut gallery.
It's a what?
There's a little Frank. You got a name tag.
We know who you are.
Hello.
Okay, great. Thank you. All right, so the commission, the committee members, you have a packet which was distributed on Friday. You should also have this, which is supplemental pages to the packet. This is what I'm going to be referencing. So if you just make sure you have the correct version. Does everybody have this? It says supplemental A.
Got it.
Mm-hmm. Updated financials. Okay. Okay, great. So we're looking at July through March. The port reported an operating gain of about $1.5 million, which was about $500,000 below budget, but $467,000 ahead of last year. Year-to-date, our operating revenue is 83% of budget, and expenses are 85% of budget. Our non-operating income is 92% of budget, and non-operating expenses are very close to budget. Our net loss year to date is just over $1 million, which is about $625,000 short of budget and about $1.6 million behind the prior year. Does anyone have questions so far?
Yeah, should we be concerned about this, these large variances from both budget and last year, and the fact that we're operating at a loss for the first 3 quarters?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the budget for this current fiscal year was built based off of last year's actuals, which were, it was a very good year for us last year. We had a lot of unexpected dockage revenues, cruise ships were strong, our other operating centers are performing well. This year, most operating centers are doing about what they were expected to do, but our dockage revenues are down from what they were last year. So the budget was built off of an optimistic projection, and we're not meeting those marks. Now, part of the total net loss here to date, some of that is just an increase in capital spending. One of those would be the Bales Hangar purchase, which we are looking at getting a loan of about $300,000 for that, which should help offset some of that as far as cash reserves. But the next few months, if you look at the cash projections, we should be doing a lot better to help us get out of that deficit.
Can you particularly comment on the material and services, which is so much higher than both the budget and last year? Why that expense line is so much higher? What's going on?
The expense line being higher than last year, or?
I'm sorry.
Lower than last year. Yeah, right. Yeah. So it's not too far off from prior year, right? Materials and services, $3.3 million compared to $3.4 million. But when we look at the budget, there is a variance of over $1 million. So a lot of that is because the dockage revenues that were optimistic. There are a lot of relevant expenses with those, like longshore labor. So without the revenue, we don't have that correlated expense. I also over-projected a bit on water, which is a big ticket item and tends to have a lot of variances depending on the seafood processor's usage. So if you look at your first page, the second to last, the expense says the utilities were about $300,000 off, so most of that is water. The fuel is the biggest contributor, so the airport fuel sales last year were doing very well around this time, so we built in a very optimistic budget. We fell short of those marks, so there's a big variance in the airport fuel cost of sales from budget.
All right. Sorry, go ahead, Mr. Wilson.
Do we know why?
No, that might be a good question for Matt McGrath. I will say that the airport is not underperforming compared to prior years. It's just underperforming when you look at this optimistic budget. It's actually good.
I have a question on dockage.
Yes, sir.
How much of the dockage shortfall is the reduction in cruise ship activities?
So if you look at revenue, the second paragraph, it does say that the budget had included over $100,000 in revenue from the canceled Princess cruise ships.
Which one?
The first page, second paragraph, revenue.
Okay.
Yeah. And then when we built the budget, I added some contingency for unexpected dockage because the year before we had the Carnival Panorama. That was an example of how difficult it can be to budget because nobody knew it was coming. It added about $150,000 to our revenues for that year, and we had no such visit this year. So.
I think All in America also concluded the problem with the book coming directly out of Canada to Astoria problem.
Yeah, the canceled Princess cruise ships.
Not only Princess, but All in America.
She Say that again a little louder.
All in America is canceled all our ships in the fall because they came from a foreign port, and it was a change in policy by the customs people on how they, when they allowed people to disembark off the ship, which allowed people to even get off the ship in Astoria. That's why they quit coming here. So that's an issue that probably can be talked about later, but I was curious the impact of them not coming here, how big that is, just for the port, let alone all of the local businesses.
How far behind budget overall on a net income basis would you expect the port to end up a year? Will we break even or show a loss?
I think that the gap will narrow over the next few months. We're expecting a lot of visitors to our Pier 1 in May for the Navy ships. So that's going to help quite a bit. There still will be a gap, though. We'll end the year with a budget shortfall for revenue.
Do you think we will break even in terms of income and expense?
I don't know the answer to that. Yeah, I think we'll probably end the year with a bit of a loss in net income, which is not unusual for the port, just because of our large capital expenditure items.
Well, that brings up the...
Is there any carryover in this $100,000 bad debt that we have in the boatyard and the marina? If we carry that over for another year, is that all for the last year?
So that bad debt expense item, that is for debt from prior years. Some of it was in this year, but most of it's older debt. Income. So we recognized income from customers, but we never got the cash. And so finally we got to the point where we decided that we would never get that cash. And so we wrote off that income and turned it into bad debt expense. So it's not a cash item. It just recognizes a reduction in revenues.
We do not have a bad debt reserve on our balance sheet.
We do not.
We just expense it as it comes.
Yeah, I mean when we do the financials at the end of the year, we do a bad debt adjustment. But for operating purposes during the year, we just recognize it as an expense when it occurs.
And I think for myself, a lot of the questions here have to do with the question of whether our operating shortfall will affect our capital projects. Are there things that we will not be able to do that we will have to delay because our operating budget is not as robust as we had hoped?
Yeah, I mean, that's been happening throughout the year. When we look at our project list, we adjust it depending on what we have the cash to do. And so for the past few months, we haven't been doing much in capital spending. And that's why we have a priority on our capital list. So we always prioritize grant-funded projects. We have yet to have had a shortfall in our match. So we always meet those obligations. Pier 2 gets whatever resources it needs. But there are projects that were not a priority that just won't get done this year.
And how much of that is creating, you know, how much of it can we sort of stand to delay reasonably? And is there any of it that is really creating significant problems down the road?
I don't think anything is creating significant problems at this time. I think if we continue to defer into future years, it could. But right now, nobody has concerns.
Well, that's good. That's mm-hmm. a good thing.
Yeah.
I have some questions on cash flow. Cash flow statements. One of the things I was trying to do and couldn't quite get to.
This will be back in your regular packet.
Yeah, this is page 6. And this is the first one I asked, are you finding this helpful as a way to manage the court's position to project cash on this?
Yeah. I was actually happy to see that some of my estimates were not too far off from the actuals. That did make me feel like it was a more of a useful tool. Because it seems like a very moving target, cash flows, but I think we've got it fine-tuned pretty well.
Good.
Yeah.
One of the things I was trying to do and couldn't is balance the cash on the cash flow to the cash on the balance sheet.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the sense that there were more restricted funds than the balance sheet was showing. Is that inaccurate?
I can break out what that cash is made up of. So it should be the operating account, payroll account, money market account. It excludes the restricted AOC4 funds, but it includes the undeposited funds as well. So it's those four items.
So the undeposited funds are not shown on the balance sheet?
So they are shown on the balance sheet. They're just a little further down under accounts receivable. And maybe I can move those up. That could be helpful.
Because I don't want to crunch numbers now, but just look at the restricted funds compared to the balance sheet, which is off by 40-some thousand. Just overall, just because I think if one does these cash flows, you want to really balance it back to the balance sheet so that there's more clarity there.
Are you asking about the line at the bottom restricted towards Airport Industrial Park?
Yeah, that's one of them.
Okay. So that is actually not the restricted AOC4 funds. That represents money that we received from the county, which is earmarked for the Airport Industrial Park, which has not been spent yet out of our operating account. And so we don't like to include that with our cash, with our available cash.
Well, I would suggest that as you, when you create your balance sheet, that you have a separate category for all restricted funds, so that the Board of Commissioners and the Finance Committee can really have a sense of what funds are available to be spent based on how management is operating and what funds have to be kept for very specific purposes.
Yeah, that's understandable. We just haven't officially restricted those funds. It's more for our own internal tracking, but I can discuss that and look into it.
And if they're not officially restricted and the commission wants to change them, they should be aware of that and change them if they want. Anyone else have questions or comments, suggestions, anything on the financials?
Not I.
So, if you will fill out your report at the commission meeting that they have been recommended for approval or included in the consent agenda, however you want to do that.
Absolutely.
Okay. And two other formal items on our agenda today are the approval or the review and approval. Actually, I want to stop just a minute. Do you want to say anything at all about the
So the account is performing well. You'll see that the dividends for the month ending March were just shy of $2,000. So that's growth that we're seeing on that balance.
Are these monies commingled with other similar accounts outside of our particular account? Are these being managed specifically for the program of sewer?
No, it's a state fund. All of the cities, counties, special districts, public corporations are allowed to deposit funds in this account. It's kind of it's a sort of quasi money market fund.
So we got $500,000 of our dollars commingled with the state of Oregon Treasury's account. And they just break out our $500,000 and then we get $2,000 out of that?
Sort of. I mean, it's not the Treasury's funds. It's all the funds deposited by these various sub-state level governmental entities. And it's not managed by the Treasury. They contracted out to a professional investment firm.
And that's U.S. National Bank's subsidiary. U.S. Bank's subsidiary, which is PFM Asset Management, which is tied to U.S. Bank Asset Management in relation to the Oregon State Treasurer's Office. Does that sound right?
It's U.S. Bank Corp, which I believe is, I don't know if that's the same as U.S. Bank.
It is, yeah.
Okay.
It'd be the holding company that owns U.S. Bank and its various other financial subsidiaries. Would you like it, Mr. Lansing, at our next meeting, Melanie can provide some additional information off the website that describes this fund in greater and various other investment opportunities that the state makes available.
Thank you for the offer, but no.
I'm sorry?
Thank you for the offer, but no, she didn't have to.
Okay. Yeah, does anyone have any questions about this investment fund? We've talked about it at various other meetings. But
yeah, and just so you know, we have pulled some of those funds out and put them back into our operating account to make sure that we meet sort of, we have a $500,000 threshold. So we've pulled some of them out, but I expect to put them back within the next week or two. So they'll be out of the account for 2, maybe 3 weeks total.
Well, I think that's important to note because it demonstrates the liquidity in this account. It's not locked up.
Absolutely.
I mean, we've gotten to it however we wish at an insignificant cost.
Yeah. It took less about a day.
So at our last meeting, the management presented to our committee the fiscal management policy, which had not been reviewed for about 5 years, and there were a number of suggestions and updates that the committee made and the management made and had now been presented with a revised policy that has a my way of thinking, a number of improvements. And what I'd like is for Melanie to go over some of the highlights, and then if there are questions, comments that people want to make, things that they still are unclear about, you can deal with that. And if everyone's satisfied, you can recommend this for approval to the Port Commission.
Yeah, so at the last meeting, I went through all of the changes in the document, so I don't know if I need to go into that level of detail here. I will just say that the two biggest changes that we're looking to make are to raise the capitalization threshold from $10,000 to $25,000, and that just reflects the idea that cost increases make, you know, You can't buy anything for $10,000, basically. And $25,000 aligns with the governor's threshold for medium procurements. So we did that, which is reflected throughout the document, starting on page 17. And then the page before, page 16, we added EFT payments. So I'll read the text and then I'll explain it. So electronic funds transfer payments may proceed upon either written or verbal authorization from the executive director or his or her designee. Each EFT payment must be accompanied by proper supporting documentation. Supporting documentation for the payment must be signed by the executive director or designee as well as a member of the Board of Commissioners within 15 days of the payment being made. So what we're looking to do here is grant our accounts payable the authority to, under the executive director's approval, make payments by EFT transfer outside of the normal check run dates. We've run into issues where a payment has been due more immediately. We sometimes will pay it by credit card, which is not ideal. We'd rather run it through our operating account. And so this allows that person to do it with authorization from the executive director, and then it would be reviewed by the commission staff when they come in to do the check run.
Good. Let me just add from my own banking experience that this is not only a more economical way to pay bills, but it is a considerably safer way than using checks for several reasons. The controls over entering and releasing these electronic payments are stringent. Two people have to be involved. There's various coding divided. Back in the day, they used to have a little token. I don't know if they still do it that way, but there are really very, you know, very good controls over it that the banks insist upon for their protection, if for nothing else. There's been a rash of professional criminals who steal checks from the mail. Steal checks and change designations. And this eliminates that possibility because the payments are made electronically.
If I could just insert, I will say that's happened twice since I started here in 2020.
Wow. That people have stolen our checks.
The checks we've written to vendors have been taken out of their mailbox, modified, and cashed through Lewis and Clark Bank. And there have been a number of instances where a check just never made it to the vendor, so we did a stop payment. We would do a stop payment and reissue.
And all that is expensive and time-consuming. It's being unsafe. So this is really the kind of, there will always be checks. When I started banking in the late 1970s, it was like, oh, checks are going away. They'll never go away. There'll always be some checks. But this is really how the majority of bills are paid by businesses. I also want to note section 4.1, the cash receipts and deposits. We have very good dual controls and segregation of duties on handling cash. I don't know, does a lot of cash come through your office or not?
No. Most of the big cash payments are done, and it's not even significant. We're talking thousands of dollars, not tens of thousands, but they go through the marina and then they come to us in sealed bank envelopes.
Okay, are there... Oh, and I had one other question on page 18. This has to do with inventory tracking.
Mm-hmm.
It's always something that kind of people tend to put off. I'm not saying porters are, but it's a tendency that companies have. We say we'll inventory all our property and equipment on an annual basis. Do we do that?
We do. Yeah. We've tried to tighten up the process a bit. We have a pretty good inventory system for our furniture, office equipment, and computers. So that's handled very well. As far as our larger assets, we do track those every year. They're built up a list that I don't think was well maintained. So there's some older items that don't have very good descriptions, so that's something that we're looking to update. But we do have maintenance crew go out every year. They have a list, and they review it for any changes, anything that's old or has become obsolete or any new. We usually pick up on new equipment items during the year and add it to the list, but they'll check and make sure there's nothing else that we need to add.
Yeah, this is important not only for operational reasons, but for insurance purposes in case of loss.
Absolutely. Yeah, and our auditor requires that we, when we present our capital list, we have a number that we call our capital assets, and we're required to corroborate that with the inventory list, which we do.
Well, I'm glad, I'm very happy to see that this is something we do keep up with, because I know, I mean, I've seen instances where people say they do.
Yeah, I think it started under Will. He started getting that going again.
That's me. Sorry.
All right.
One question here. Says the commission responsibilities for finances. The treasurer is responsible for overseeing financial operations, report finances, including income, investments, expenditures, cash flow, and audit. May the commission review applicable financial reports as deemed necessary. I don't have anything in my hands that says that I don't think that it gives me all that information where the funds are or this or that.
I think that those that information would be included in the monthly reports presented to the commission. If there's anything on this list missing from those reports, we could look at it. But
we don't have a year end report here.
You're looking at section 4, is that right?
Are you on page 11, the first
section
page?
Section 1. Mm-hmm.
This is an important point that Commissioner Campbell raises. The position of treasurer here is singled out as opposed to the commission as a whole as having these responsibilities. And when one of the commissioners is elected, appointed to be treasurer, he or she takes on this responsibility. And I think it would be helpful if the for the treasurer to feel comfortable that again he or she was getting all the information that's required. So perhaps you could meet or meet with Will to sort of make sure you have all the information in a way that's useful to you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds good. So do we want to leave the text as is and then just try to enforce that better?
This, I assume this is specified, this comes out of the bylaws, this responsibility.
It is the bylaws, yeah. Yeah.
So therefore it needs to stay.
Okay.
And it may be helpful, you know, each year as the commission appoints the treasurer, that there be a discussion with finance so that the treasurer, whether it's the same one or a new person, feels that they're getting the information that they need in a form that's useful to them.
Yep. Is there training for the treasurer, i.e. some kind of a class that comes in special districts as far as this is your new responsibility, and these are the things you need to pay attention to? Does special districts have a class like that Dunkel might be in charge of?
Not that it's come across my radar, but we could look into it a little bit. Yeah.
I didn't mean to get down in the weeds with the new treasurer on each time that there's a transition, just that it's been an issue that's been discussed and that
not, I would like to get a motion to recommend approval of this policy to the Board of Commission. Someone like to move?
Sure.
Mr. Lansing moves. Can we get a second? Mr. Fix seconds. All in favor? We now have another policy. This is a brand new policy, our investment policies. This was, if you go back to for a moment to the fiscal or financial management policy, under 17.4.3, it said the court will manage all cash and investments according to the commission-approved investment policy maintained externally in this finance manual. Well, in the old financial management policy, it said there is no such policy. There is no investment policy. So it seemed like a good idea to create one, especially as we now actually do have investments. This is a brief policy. We can discuss it today and approve it, or if people want to have some more time to look it over, we can discuss it today and then delay the investment policy approval till our June meeting. Melanie, you want to talk a little bit about the policy?
Where did that language come from?
For the investment policy, just some templates that I was able to find.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, they were customized. I worked a little bit with the chairman on making edits. So starting on page 20 of your packet, so the investment authority is with the head of finance, but under the oversight of the finance committee and the board of commissioners. And then it kind of restates that investment oversight. It says the board of commissioners is ultimately responsible for overseeing investment activities. And then the finance committee provides additional oversight. Investment objectives, this is fairly boilerplate, but it's preservation of capital. So safety of the principal, so we don't want to invest in any risky funds. Maintaining sufficient liquidity to meet operational contingency needs, and then achieving a reasonable rate of return. Investment of surplus funds. So we set a couple of benchmarks here under item 2, short-term fund investments. So surplus funds exceeding $1 million will be invested in instruments with maturities of 12 months or less. I should start with 1. So funds required for day-to-day operations and near-term obligations will be invested in highly liquid instruments such as the LGIP account, which is where we are now. So we have done that. Item 2, the short-term fund investments, so surplus funds exceeding $1 million will be invested in instruments with maturities of 12 months or less, like securities or certificates of deposits. We have not hit this benchmark yet. And then item 3, surplus funds exceeding $2 million will be invested in instruments with maturities up to 5 years, provided that liquidity needs are met. Does anyone have questions about those 3 benchmarks? Do those seem reasonable?
I'll have some comments when you're done.
Yeah, okay, absolutely. There's a note about due diligence on credit ratings, so we're responsible for doing research when we're making investment decisions. Section 5, portfolio diversification and limitations. This sets specific, it outlines some requirements for how we'll diversify our portfolio. Section 6, reporting and overview. So the head of finance will provide a quarterly investment report to the committee, which we've done at today's meeting. And then Section 7, policy compliance and amendments, says it's subject to Oregon law, be amended as necessary. So those are the highlights of the document.
I want to make a few comments on this policy. One of the things, it doesn't say so in quite so many words, but one of the most important words in this policy is the word maturities, which is to say we are talking only about debt instruments, bonds, notes, bills, time deposits, similar sorts of things that over time mature, as opposed to equities, stocks, which do not mature. So what we're saying is we are only investing, the report will only invest in items, in securities that will at some time or other pay 100 cents on the dollar when they mature. That's really the key here. There's not the kind of, there's risk. There's no such thing as an investment without risk. But there's not the kind of risk with equities and similar types of investments that you never know. It's just whatever the market values them at any given moment is what they're worth. This is the same type of thing that all governmental entities in the state of Oregon are required to maintain. And this credit quality is very high, is also an important point because the preservation of principal is the most important thing that's available to us, or that's we want to maintain. The second thing I want to point out is that at the moment, most of this is more aspirational than actual. We our only investment right now is the $500,000 we have in the very short term fund. We think that the port is preparing itself to say when we have lots and lots of money, our we'll have other sorts of investments opportunities that we may wish to take advantage of, and here are some of the guidelines for that. But at the moment, much of this does not come into play. So questions, Mr. Risman, I'm sure you have some thoughts.
We have limitations, as you just pointed out. Right? So what happens in the future will determine what's going on in this economy. So where we're going to put things, I don't know who the hell knows what's going to happen in the next couple of years. Right now, your safety is just in your government bonds, and that's the only way we can lose money is if the government goes broke. I'm not so sure if it's going to happen or not happen, but it probably shouldn't happen.
I always used to say that if the U.S. Treasury defaults on its obligations, you'll have a lot more to worry about than the U.S. Treasury defaulting on its obligations.
That's ridiculous. But there will be some interesting things to do later on, if and when we get the axe and get a hold of that money that starts coming in. There'll be some nice opportunities. For every catastrophe out there, I've always found that there's usually an opportunity someplace.
It's true.
And that's kind of happened now with the gyrations in the stock market. You watch some of these things on a daily basis. Everybody's got some favorite stocks. Assume once in a while, and one day they're up, the next day they're down. If you can climb into that rhythm, short-term trading is generally a loser's game. Sooner or later, you're going to get clipped. But there are some interesting situations where these stocks are coming down, not because the companies are doing bad, it's just because of what's taking place someplace else. And you can figure that out. There's some good opportunities out there. It sounds elementary, but it works. I know. I've been doing it for years.
Others, comments, questions?
Not me.
All right. Are people ready to make a motion to recommend approval of this, or do you want to have time to wait till the next meeting?
This time is as good as any.
Okay. Then, I'd like to call for a motion to recommend approval of the investment policies to the Port Commissioners.
I recommend acceptance and thank Norm for her work.
You a second?
I'll second it.
All in favor? Aye. Okay, so we have now made three recommendations for approval to the Board of Commissioners. Okay? And our last item here is a discussion of financing for Pier 2 rehabilitation. This is kind of a old business since we started this discussion at our January meeting. At that time, I know Will was more concerned with looking at
No, we're not. No, fortunately, we feel confident in the funds. There is a timing issue I was made aware of where we do need to get the project kicked off next year, that being sort of a deadline for the PIDP grant, but we expect that to happen without issue.
How about delays in the permitting due to changes in staffing at the federal level? Any have you heard anything? Are there any concerns with that being delayed?
No, not that we've heard of. I have heard that the people at the PIDP grant administrators have been excellent to work with, so they have good confidence in that grant going through and the timeliness of it. And then the Connect Oregon grant for the matching funds, we didn't get that this year, but I think there is good likelihood of us getting that next year. So the budget shortfall would be, or the cash shortfall would be, the construction actual costs exceeding what was estimated at the time that we went after the grant, or a shortfall in the matching funds.
And do you feel that you have sort of ears close enough to the ground to keep up with what's happening in Washington in this regard?
I don't know the answer to that.
It's very difficult in this environment to know from one day to the next. Did management have any other questions on this that they wanted the finance committee to look at, or the port commissioners?
I think it was mostly just brainstorming what other options are available to obtain cash on presumably maybe short notice. So I think one thing that we were going to do was modify our budget for that year to make sure that everything went towards the Pier 2 project. So that was certainly one thing, but then I think you had mentioned that there might be foundations that would be interested in contributing or other options available to us.
Yeah, that's certainly the case. I mean, these foundations love the penthouse. You know, they want to put the last bricks in, and then they can say, hey, we funded this wonderful project.
Yeah, so is there any, I guess, recommendations on relationship building or preliminary steps, I guess, to try to get set up for that if we needed it?
Yeah, I got a question. I live down at the end of the river next door to the job here, and I see an awful lot of ships coming through here. Now, a lot of them are foreign ships. Do they deposit any money in our bank account as they come through here? But a lot of them don't stop here necessarily. I know which ones would be cruise ships, you know, that are parking down here, but all these other ones that are coming through here, did they ring our cash register at all for any reason whatsoever?
Go ahead. You're talking about ships that occasionally pulls in and ties up, is that what you're talking about?
I'm talking about the ships that are going through here, they're using our bar pilots and our, you know, river pilots, and maybe they'll park someplace down the road here close by. Because
yep.
They can't go any further. I mean, what?
Go ahead, Robert.
What happens?
Go ahead, Robert.
We lost that route.
We lost that case in court.
Yeah, well,
yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know about that.
It was a small step. And there's a lot of logic behind that. It costs this region a lot when a ship just transits through. I mean, even the minor cost to the Coast Guard, whether they have to react or not, there's a cost to that, and we tried to make a modest charge, and we kept track of who came through, and they sued us. They was the steamship
operators? Correct, Columbia River Steamship Operators Association.
Yeah, they sued us, and we lost.
It turned out that our attempt collect fees was a direct violation of the United States Constitution, in the separation of authority between federal and state.
It's coming through your backyard, you can't do anything about it.
It was a thin line, but it took 2 years to settle it. There's a lot of questions.
If one of those guys goes bump into our property, then we can jump it. Use them on our seawall.
some judge made a decision on that in court, how that happened, or was there a committee that sat down and said, these are the rules and regulations, and that's the way
it's going to be? I think it went to the Supreme Court.
It was the Supreme Court. It went that far?
Yeah.
In terms of developing relationships, yes, it's always a good idea to begin developing. There are only, you know, I don't know, like half a dozen at the most significant foundations in the state, and it is certainly a good idea to develop relationships with, you know, Ford Family, Murdoch, Ford Community Fund, Allison, and, you know, it's, yes, we should be developing relationships there. Just to keep them up to date. Let them know what we're up to. The same way you do with the state legislature, with your legislator people. So what we're, you know, you have this, you have a newsletter now. It's a good thing to have those organizations on your mailing list as a start, and just call them up at some point and say, you know, if you're ever out here, we'll give you a tour, or just to make sure that they, just to get them to a point of knowing what's going on. We're a long way from asking for money, but that's when you want to start developing this, is before you do need to ask for money.
So would you recommend like an introduction letter, or just get them on our mailing list and then make calls, or?
I call. I mean, these are not in general huge bureaucracies. They're fairly lean. It's not like, you know, the Ford Foundation in New York or Rockefeller, any of those. It's
personal contact.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I call them up and say, we want to, you know, this is what we're doing, we want to talk. Then you just get them on the mailing list so that, then, you know, once a year or so you talk to them.
Okay.
A minimal investment of time will have the opportunity to, you know, do something. I'm having, as it turns out, later this week I'm having lunch with somebody from the Oregon Community Fund. And, you know, a few months ago I mentioned the fork, and I'll do it again. Mm-hmm. This is something that, because a lot of these foundations, they'll have what are called donor advised funds, where people will put, they'll set up their own trust based on their interests. So, you know, there are a lot of them, and there may be some people who have an interest in economic development, or some people who have interest in maritime things. Would be, or environmental things, or, you know, whatever it plays to, might say, oh, this sounds like a great project, we'd like to have our money go there. So you never know. It's just a good idea to build that network, and in this state, it's not particularly hard to do.
Okay.
Well, it's very important that you tell a story that demonstrates the positive impact of what they would contribute.
Yeah.
If they embrace your story, they're more prone to give you money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we do a good job of that through our grant writing process.
Well, so. But I mean, this is, at least we found out, when you have dialogue with people who control the money, and the dialogue just creates positive impact.
Are you talking foundation rather than just federal and state?
Yes, private foundations. And Mr. Fick knows whereof he speaks from his long experience with the Community College Foundation, which doesn't give out money except, you know, within college. But
we do give out money to students.
To students, right, to go to the college. But it has those ties.
Captain Stevens well understands.
I got another question for you. This may not have anything to do with the waterway here, but I'm trying to set up a town center. I don't know if you're familiar with that at all. They've got some property that's available in the middle of town there that they're trying to figure out what to do with it. It's town square.
In Astoria?
Yeah, a town square. What about sort of getting involved in some of that work? I don't know what we can do for them, but, you know, but it can't hurt the these big cruise ships that do come in, because there'll be something, you know, in addition to just a store that these people can go to, that
Chamber of Commerce in Astoria has, in addition to its board of directors, has an advisory board of people who are in various governmental positions. And Assistant or Deputy Director McGrath has been attending those meetings regularly and making important contributions to keep the business community aware of what's happening with the port. So he would be, that would be the right sort of, I think, conduit to continue that connection.
Yeah, I have a personal opinion about where the town center should be. It should be on the waterfront, not 5-6 blocks off the waterfront. I think it should be where basically our history has come from in this area, and I think it could be developed into something at least as impactful as what they would do with the former Safeway parking. I have questions regarding this customs and cruise ship situation. I've had occasion to talk to Kevin.
Okay, we're in other business right now, so that would be a part of other business. Go right ahead.
I'm very interested as a citizen, but also a member of the board, to see if there has been any positive impact of the changes in policy by customs in the onerous process they've decided to perform on any cruise ship to come to this town from a foreign port. I don't know if that question has been asked, because it's causing, I think, substantial adverse impact, financial impact to the city and to the port, because their process is so onerous that cruise ships that come from Vancouver or Victoria specifically is where they're coming from, no longer stop here, because by the time the customs agents are done talking to every last person on the ship, they have no time to get off and enjoy our hospitality. And it's costing the businesses in this community a substantial amount of money, and it's costing the port a significant amount of money. And I think I seriously doubt that they have anything to show for their effort.
Robert, weren't we discussing that before he came in?
I'm told that that's been resolved. We haven't had a ship this year yet from a foreign port, so it hasn't been tested. But there was a get-together in Washington, D.C., I believe. Bruce Connor, our cruise ship liaison, and Matt McGrath tell me that it's been resolved and they have fixed it. We'll see.
I guess the important thing is that it's been communicated to every cruise ship.
That's very, very good news.
Yeah, it's exceptional, yeah.
I think Will has an update, but he's keeping it to the best right now until there's more solid foundation, but I think it's going to be resolved.
Wonderful. It's really
good. It sounded like that. Mm-hmm. You agree, Melanie?
Yeah, my understanding, and Will will have specifics, but my understanding is that CBP has accepted some responsibility for trying to remedy the situation.
Yeah.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Okay, anything else? In the middle of the order. In that case, we will have completed our meeting here within an hour, which is good. And we will all meet again towards the end. When we look at the June 30 year end internally prepared statements.
Okay.
Thank you, dude.
I move we adjourn.
All right. All in favor?